at the buzzer. McCord on its way. Oh, my goodness.
They have to get it in. With no timeouts, they do.
Courtside with Greenberg and Dockage, the definitive college basketball podcast.
Welcome to Courtside with Greenberg and Dockage, world's greatest podcast, no doubt about it. The two most intelligent authorities on the game of college basketball, and for my man D Squared, basically life and anything that happens in the world today. But D Squared,
yo,
yesterday, NBA comes down like it's a real shock. Maybe when it happened, it's a shock. Saying that for a select few elite one-and-done prospects, they're going to offer an opportunity to go and play in the G League, pay up to $125,000, give them a chance to, quote-unquote, be coached and transition into the new league, give them some type of counseling and education and personal growth programs, and give them an option as opposed to playing college basketball. They haven't said how they're going to select those guys, how many guys are going to be selected, how those players are going to get back in the draft, or they're actually going to recruit those guys to play in the G League. What is your first reaction? First time caller, I'll hang up.
This whole thing seems unorganized to me. And I go back to the summer when USA Basketball was included in a thing where they were going to, by that commission, they were going to organize and get the elite players. I'll say this, Seth. If my son was great and my son was coming out and he was going to be one of these guys, here's what my first reaction was this. If they're going to pay hundreds of thousands of dollars to players illegally under the table from shoe companies, as we were learning in this trial, it opens a door for not only $125,000 for a kid to go, but it opens a door for shoe companies to say, look, good. Now we're going to pay Zion Williamson $20 million, and we're going to get him going with shoe deals. So I think that's the interesting part of it. The $125,000, would you rather play in the D League and take a chance on getting exposed by men that are going to be, you know, fighting for jobs and you're coming out of high school? I don't know. But I do know this. The 30th best player, Bowen, got himself $100,000. I can only imagine what 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 are going to get from shoe companies if they are in play, if you can do it above board. So that's the most interesting thing to me, Seth. You, what did you think?
You know, it's interesting. First of all, you know, everyone talks about, well, it's going to open up to shoe companies to just do it legally. Part of the reason the shoe companies try to do what they've been doing is to help their college teams win.
True.
Because when their college teams win, they're on television, mm-hmm. and actually $100,000 and the $8,000 are paying that school, whomever, whatever school it is. Let me tell you something, that pales compared to the amount of marketing bang they get for that, not for the player, but for the logo.
Can
so
I
when
answer
you get to the NCAA tournament, the Elite Eight, the Final Four, they don't have to buy advertising that's astronomical. They have it 24, 7 days a week, every single night.
But I'll answer that with this. That's great, and the shoes worn by players certainly sell, but it pales in comparison to a guy like Michael Jordan or LeBron James or the next Michael Jordan or the next LeBron James. And I get it. I get that you want your brand out there and, you know, whatever school, who is it, Michigan and Villanova, both I think Nike schools last year, people saw Nike. And that's great. But I think in the NBA, it's a unique deal. In shoes with basketball, the star sells far more. Look, Indiana wears Adidas. Are teams in the state going to wear Adidas because they want to be like Indiana? Of course they are. But I think all that pales compared to trying to find the next Michael Jordan, trying to market the next guy.
I agree with that. Yeah. I agree with that. But you know, but Under Armour's done that with Steph Curry.
Yes.
All right. But is he selling shoes?
No. I don't know the answer to that. He's not at the level of LeBron James and Michael Jordan, and neither is Jordan Spieth or any of the guys that Under Armour has gotten who have been champions. You're right. Absolutely.
Yeah, I mean, it's a fine line. I'm more concerned about, and this is my whole thing, and $125,000, you know, is a lot of money, but it's $75,000. And it's for 1 year.
Right.
And they're playing against 25-year-old men.
Right.
And like, you know, the Basley kid that committed to Syracuse and then decided he was going to go to the G League and then found out, wait a second, they're grown men up there. I'm not ready for the G League. I might get exposed. All right. I might better off going and working out with a workout guru. And then, you know, the less people see and the more they see me just running and jumping and bouncing and doing those things, you know, I don't want to hurt my value. You know, the G League compared to college basketball. And look, the money's the money. And if they, you know, like if they can make money on their likeness and, you know, quite honestly, I think if college athletics ever did that, I'm not sure as many people would get the money people think they'd get, but are those guys ready as 18-year-olds? Now, they're not playing on national TV in the G League. They're not flying on charters. They're not getting unlimited meals. They're not living in housing that's paid for. They're not getting a place to go back to. So for 1 year, $120, basically $75,000 after taxes, because some have to pay taxes on it, compared to, if they say they're not one of those guys that's going to get one of those contracts, compared to all the other things that surround college basketball, all right? Pell Grant, cost of attendance, free housing, free meals, player development, nutritionist, massage therapist, charter planes, and a place to go back to when you're done, compared to the risk of maybe exposing yourself because you're not physically ready or you're not emotionally ready. Or you're hanging out with 25-year-old
Ben. But let me ask you, who doesn't think you're a top 10 player, all right, which is what, you know, they're going to try to get to come. Which top 10 player thinks like what you just said? Every top 10 player thinks, hell, I thought when I was coming out, I don't know what I was, when I was going to Indiana, I'm watching Indiana guys on TV, I'm better than him. I'm just saying, that's the way the world works. I mean, these guys in that position aren't concerned. Now, they're going to get exposed. What you're saying is 1,000% right. They're going to get exposed. They're going to get but who doesn't think like that? You know, what top 10 guy thinks, oh, man, I better not go play against, what's the kid's, kid popped into my head, Scotty Reynolds from Villanova from 100 years ago. You know, they all think they can whip their ass, truthfully.
Yeah, let me, what do you think, and maybe I'm wrong. Look, I'm going to miss seeing great players for you. It's better to have a great player for you. But in the end, they're not putting G League on TV. So what, they're putting college basketball on TV. And these contracts are long term. And you know what? In the end, the fans, they're, you know, I don't think it's the impact is the quality of our game, because we're going to miss these 10 guys, top 10 guys every year. Is the quality of our game going to go down?
No.
Would it be
no.
even better because it'll even be more competitive because there'll be more level playing field?
Yes. We do. You said this a million times. I mean, let's be honest. You have said this. I have said this. Fine. We make a big deal out of what? 10 guys? Right.
Yeah.
I mean, you think about that trial, right? There's a trial going on that everybody's saying college basketball is corrupt. Everybody's cheating. It's like five guys, five schools, right? I mean, so no, it's not. No, the thing that I would like to see, I personally would like to see everybody go to the NBA if they can go to the NBA. And I don't give a damn. If you make a bad decision, that's on you. I mean, when did America start legislating decisions when people have free will? Now, I would love to see that. If that's not going to happen, I think this is. I don't know. I mean, this is what might happen here, Seth, is a lot of people find out. Robbie Hummel has a great story about needing an ice pack when he got hurt over in some country, right? And the guy's like, yeah, it's right down there. Go down the hall. It's down there. Well, in Purdue, three managers are running to get that ice pack. You know,
no doubt.
Right? People may understand that, wait a second here. This is a pretty good gig I got. But I do think this, Seth, I do think that if I am a shoe company rep that is at the grassroots level and my job is to find the next Michael Jordan, I am signing whoever I got to sign up, I guess is what I would say. And $125,000 and getting going on my shoe deal isn't a bad deal.
Yeah, and the thing is, I think that the logistics of, like, people saying, well, oh, my God, you know, look, having great players is great. I mean, let's face it, great players move the needle. We had a Trae Young ticker, games for a little bit last year. You know, we did the green room guys. Now, there'll still be NBA players playing in college basketball because, like, you know, there are guys that, like, Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, no one knew who he was. He wasn't going to be one of those guys. Trae Young wasn't even going to be one of those guys. So just because people are saying and watching and say, well, he's a top 10 guy, you know, he's going to get it. Let me tell you, there are other players that will emerge that will, I think, fill the void. Will we miss some of these great players and some of these great plays? Yeah, but let me ask you, as a fan, now you are going to get a – like at Indiana, your fans have a love affair with your team.
Mm-hmm.
Yes or no?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, the brand, the team, yes.
The brand, yeah, team.
Yes.
When you're going to have guys for 2 or 3 years, not saying it's right or wrong, don't you think it will bring back a little bit of that love affair with getting to know these guys and feeling like it's our team and we're not renting them?
Yeah, if that's important, yes, 100%. I'll give you an example. Like Eric Gordon's a really good pro. Eric Gordon played here 1 year, right? And Indiana. And Eric Gordon almost begs the fan base to remember him. You know what I mean? Like, he's smart enough to know that when he comes back, he's probably going to live in Indianapolis because he's a homebody kid. And, I mean, he does everything he can for him to connect back to Indiana. So, yes, absolutely in these bigger programs. Now, does that make a difference? Probably not. If you got some economist from, you know, The Athletic on here to tell you all the fine, but I live in the real world, and the real world in this state is people want to love their players. They love the brand. What's the brand worth is always my question on a lot of these things. There is no brand in the G League. There's none. There's no brand. So let me ask you this question, Seth. Does a kid help or hurt his quote-unquote brand, which is what everybody talks about now, by going to the G League as opposed to playing at a top 5-10 school for a year?
So I agree with you on that. I think that, I mean, the G League's not playing on national TV every single
Only
night.
The finals.
Yeah, you but know. I mean, all right, no. I got a question. What's the ratings for the G League? You think people are going to tune in to the G League finals as opposed to watching a Big Monday?
None. No.
Is the G League all of a sudden going to get a better NBA deal? Like people say, well, you know, everything about the NBA is great. It's true. And people even watch it in the summer because there's no other basketball to compete with it.
Like John Calipari has
Indiana,
John Calipari has a great, he has a great plan for August. I think it's fantastic, but no one's going to listen.
Yeah, no, they'll never do it. They'll never do it.
No.
But they'll do spring football games.
Right.
We'll do spring football. I mean, like that. That's a funny thing. Why couldn't August be the spring football of college basketball?
It should be. It absolutely should be. Either that, or you're going to wonder who's the backup quarterback of your NFL team. It absolutely should be. And I think Calipari's idea is fantastic.
Now, some people, the path from G League to the NBA. I mean, like once these kids are done with this 1 year at the G League playing for the Mad Ants, they go back into the draft.
You play okay. I mean, Brandon Jennings went over to Europe and averaged like 2 points a game, right? I mean, guys don't go over and tear up Europe. So let me ask you this, Seth. Best player
Terrence
comes
Ferguson.
Out. What's that?
Terrence Ferguson, same thing in Australia, I think.
Yeah. Best player comes out, goes to the G League, averages 5. Does that enhance his stock as opposed to taking Duke to the Final Four or to the Final Eight or to whatever? Does that enhance because you're playing against pros? Or does it make you go, huh, we got a real opportunity to look at this guy in an NBA setting and it ain't him. This ain't for him.
You know what? I think that's an interesting scenario because I'll tell you the other scenario just to piggyback on. What about the guys that are in the G League that are making $35,000 and all of a sudden these hotshot kids come in, they're making $125,000 and they're not good enough to be in a rotation?
Right.
Whoa. What happens then?
Those
guys are fighting for survival. Trying to get a call up and trying to, you know, now they're seeing these guys with two ways and these guys making $125,000 and they're saying, wait a second here. You know, I'm a grown man. You know, that could create an interesting scenario. And then you're going to have to enlarge the size of your staffs. What about the personal growth and improvement programs? Are they really going to embrace that? I mean, do they have anything to hang over the kids' heads? They say they're going to go and draft character. No, they're going to draft potential. They're going to pick 10 guys with potential. Let's be honest. Now, because the NBA is a futures market. But if you get exposed, like, you know, and you can't, you know, like, get out on a ball screen, if you can't pick up things, if you are exposed to being enabled and high maintenance, what happens then?
Right.
Now, let me ask you this.
And let me just piggyback on that, Seth. For people that say, well, these kids are so good, all you got to do is check the McDonald's All-American rosters over the years for guys that did not make it in the NBA, didn't even make it in college. You know, played poorly in college. Before you say, wow, these kids are so good. No. The woods is full of guys that couldn't do jack in college that were McDonald's All-Americans. You know,
this whole thing with college coaches, you know, wanting it, not wanting it. I think college coaches want kids to be able – they want to go. They should be able to go right to the NBA out of high school.
Yes.
And you know, this being a pacifier, this being kind of like baseball's version of, you know, going into the minor leagues, you're going to see guys sign classes – and then, like, almost in college baseball, you sign class, and all of a sudden at the end of the year, you lose members of your class. And, you know, you're going to see guys have to balance their classes, going to see guys have to sign two-year guys or three-year guys or guys they think that guys aren't going to be in that top 10. You got to have a staff that can identify the next level. So yeah. That if though, you know, kind of projecting who the top 10 guys are going to be, or have a pretty good feel for this kid, says, you know what, I think I'm better off, just like you said a second ago, I'm better off playing at Kentucky, playing under this, gaining this attention, working on my brand, flying in charters, developing my body, you know, having this, you know, everything. Because as much as sports system as they're going to have, Dan, they're not going to have a support system of a big time college basketball program. I've gone all over the country the last few weeks. It's unbelievable the size of the staffs and the nutritionists and you know, the hydrotherapy and this thing and that thing. I mean, like, staffs are, it's ridiculous. A G League still is a business, and that business isn't going to be run like this, like an NBA staff. Just they don't have the manpower. They don't have the support system. The whole ice bag thing, trainers, travel, bags fly free. I mean, like, people say, well, that's no big thing. You know, they'd rather make $75,000, you know, that they're going to take home. How quick will that $75,000 be gone when you're paying for housing, when you're paying for meals?
But, Seth, that's where I say I agree with you, and you're right, I do think that if you are taking, let's just say, Zion Williamson, R.J. Barrett, Romeo Langford, whatever. The shoe companies,
they'll get shoe deals.
They're all going to get massive shoe deals.
I think they'll get long-term shoe deals for not as much money.
Really?
Because Romeo Langford, you're going to give him a five-year, $2 million a year shoe deal?
No, I don't know. I don't know the market. I mean, I'm not going to lie to you. Let me look it up. I'll tell you this. If I were going to give a kid, it would be the Williamson kid, because what do we like to see in the world? We like to see dunks. Sure. We like to see big, strong guys dunk over guys flying down the floor. I mean, it's great. Can I ask you a question off the subject?
Any question.
What do you make of the headline coming out of the trial that ESPN had about Bill Self knowing about these payments? I'm gonna read the headline here, Seth, and just set it up for a quick second. For those of you that don't know, you know, Bill Self in Kansas are right in the middle of this whole trial. Defense attorney Bill Self requested $20,000. That's the headline that I'm reading right freaking now. And I for Silvio D'Souza, and that's the headline. Defense attorney. Kansas Bill Self requested $20,000 payment for Silvio D'Souza. What do you make of that headline and that story?
Well, here's what I make of it. I think Bill Self's defense of that is going to be, you know, plain and simple. They don't have any proof of that. That's Jimmy Gatto, who didn't take the stand to be cross-examined, making an accusation, or Merle Cota, whomever it was. And that didn't happen. That's what his plausible deniability is going to be. There's no doubt about it. Here's the deal. Let me ask you if this conversation happens in real life. I really like Dan Dockich. I'll tell you, he could really help our program. I know he's, you know, he's with Adidas Grassroots. You know, anything you can do to help us, I'd really appreciate it, because, you know, we really need that kid. And, you know, he's the missing piece. How many times do you think that conversation takes place?
Ton, every day.
Every day.
Every day. How many conversations take place like the one that Curtis Townsend had?
I think those conversations take place too. I mean, you know,
can you make the argument that you're just keeping a fish on the hook?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's what the defense is going to be. But I think, you know, an assistant coach is trying to, you know, I say it all the time. Who's working for you when you're not there? You got to keep everyone at worst neutral. And, you know, I think that, you know, that's the whole conversation, you know, is Curtis Townsend saying, you know, hey, we've got to figure this out. Now he didn't drop numbers and dollars. Now that's insinuated. There's no doubt about it. I mean, but, you know, to me, it comes down to all these guys, you know, when they're trying to manipulate the room, they're trying to create some type of doubt. But, you know, the big rumor was Zion Williams' dad, even to play in events. And again, I don't know if this is true. This is alleged. Even playing different events was trying to, you know, get taken care of. So, I mean, that, which is a crazy thing in itself. I mean, if you think about it, you know, high school kid. Now, I'll tell you, the kid, Zion, well, I was with him in Italy. He's as pleasant a young man as you'll ever meet. So here it goes back to my same saying. Notice it's never the players that are asking for the money. It's always who? It's always the parents.
It's always the parents. It's always the adult. The quote-unquote adult, right?
So, like, to me, you know, I say it, and I don't say this in a negative. The parents have made a comeback.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't mean that in a condescending way, but I mean, here's the deal. They hear, parents hear all the time, and rightly agree, disagree, you know, I'm not gonna, we don't have time to elaborate on that, but they hear all the time, these guys are being exploited, everyone's getting their cut, the coaches are getting paid, the schools are making money, this guy, you know, they have money to, you know, Jay Billis and I argue about it all the time. They have money to build these facilities. Yeah, the facilities are for players. It's still, you know, the money that the sizes of the staffs and lounges and they're built to give those players the best possible experience. Now we can agree to disagree, and I respect other people's opinions, but here's the deal: is because of all that conversation and all that static, the narrative is families, adults are not afraid to say, "Wait a second, I want my cut." That's just the way it is. And the NCAA is screwing us. Everything about the NCAA is bad, and I want my money.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm not agreeing, disagreeing, but that to me is the cause and effect of the narrative.
See, I agree when Krzyzewski said college basketball for the most part is clean, because it is, except for the guys he deals with. I mean, or the guys in the, like, Bowling Green wasn't cheating. I mean, I'm just telling you, we didn't have the money. I mean, there's what, 345 schools? Yeah. I mean, how many are being named? Yeah, they are. But I think it's absurd to say that this is a blip. I think it's absurd to say that, you know,
dumbfounded it's a blip? Are you dumbfounded?
Oh, man. It's like, all right, last thing, I'll let you go. Do you think I'm wrong by our quote? I don't even call them real Hall of Famers anymore, because I'm so tired of reading, you know, the guys that are in the Hall of Fame, freaking never play a road game, $100,000 payments. I mean, is Bill Self any good if he doesn't cheat? I don't know. So at the end of the day, should Krzyzewski, screw the guys like Krzyzewski and Roy Williams, should they step up and lead here and denounce, not call people out, just denounce cheating and demand that we get back to, or are they covering their own?
You would hope that the leadership, you know, we always talk about leadership. You hope the leadership of your sport, John Belinda, Beeline did it the other day.
Right.
You would
it's
hope
funny.
Leader,
you know why he did it? Came up to me, goes, you know, I follow you on Twitter. And I was at the Big Ten meeting. He goes, you're right. Coaches need, and I'm like, I know. And next thing you know, 10 minutes later, he's doing it. I'm not saying I did it, but I'm just saying coaches are aware that coaches will become aware if more powerful people than me demand or ask that they do it. It's crazy. That nobody. Well, Krzyzewski gives $100,000 speeches to clinic or to corporations on how to lead, and all of these guys, whether it's Roy Williams, Rick Pitino, Self, Krzyzewski, they're great leading impressionable 18 to 22 year olds, but where the hell are they leading their sport? Am I just totally off base on that?
No, I don't think you're off base on that, and you can't just continually go by the plausible deniability.
No,
and like say I didn't know. I'm shocked. You just can't do that. I mean, I agree with you there, and you know, one of the reasons we decided to do this emergency pod because yesterday I had a chance to sit down with, you know, Jay Wright and Tom Izzo is because this is a story, and this is going to be a story all season long, and I do think we need more leadership, and I'm going to finish it on this. You know, the USA Basketball did that elite camp the other day. And we, you know, cause we're talking about shoe companies, right? We're, you know, with all the stuff with the shoe companies and the impact of shoe companies. And, you know, what is USA Basketball sponsored by?
Yeah, I assume Nike.
Nike.
Yeah. Okay. I assume.
Yeah. That. So like, you know, if they were, you know, if the shoe companies are the evil empire until they give them the money. Until someone's
God.
Getting a little cash.
They're
the evil. They're ruining the sport until the schools and USA Basketball and everyone else can get the cash. It's kind of funny to me.
No question.
I mean, it's kind of funny to me. But these Grant, we're back at it, baby.
Yes, sir.
The world's greatest podcast, a little emergency podcast right here. And stick around because when we come back, we're going to look. I'm going to have a little conversation with national championship coach Jay Wright and the one and only one of Dan Dockich's closest friends now.
Now.
Tom Izzo.
Yeah, we're all boys.
Now.
Now.
We're boys. And just for FYI, these two conversations that I had with Jay Wright and Tom Izzo were recorded prior to the news from the NBA. When we come back, my conversation with Jay Wright. Jay, a little bit of interesting summary. A couple of people want a little bit of your time or what, babe?
Yeah. It has been a whirlwind, but I would say, you know, after the experience of 16, I think we learned how to handle that a little bit better. Personally, I did, but most importantly, I think our team, our program, our administration, we kind of figured out how not to overdo it and say no to some things and take care of what's important.
I hope you didn't say no to Pine Valley a couple times.
Never that. You know, Jim Davis, our Villanova guys in charge of this. We can't say no to that, but I'm glad.
Hey, so the other day you had your basically the opening of the Fin. Tell me what that was like. I mean, both of us remember when the pavilion was new, but, which is
yeah, you
same commentary.
The besides all of our older alums who used to have season tickets at the field house, the old cat house.
Yeah, right? The cat
you
house.
And I remember that too.
No, and it's unfortunate. I had hair in my head back then.
But you know, the new Fin is really beautiful, obviously because it's brand new. But what's really important, I think, to all of us at Villanova basketball is at the entrance is really a tribute to all the tradition of Villanova basketball. You go through there, you know, you see everything going back. It's almost museum-like, and go back to Paul Arizin and all the greats from the 50s to 1939 Final Four team, first Final Four ever played at the Palestra. You know, so you just get a great feel for the tradition of Villanova basketball as you come in, and then again the all the new technology in there is beautiful. So we're going to really enjoy it.
Now that building, they locker rooms and all the amenities that you needed to, you know, continue to kind of, let's face it, it's an arms race and you guys have the great practice facility, but you know, facilities are important. They reshaped the interior space to give you guys what you needed.
Exactly. And it is, you know, what's really important to us at Villanova is, you know, we want to compete for Big East championships. We want to compete for national championships. But we also want to stay committed to our culture, you know, and our mission. I think that's what our athletic director, Mark Jackson, did a great job of finding that balance. You know, like you said, like, you know, we have beautiful, new locker room in there, new recruiting room. So when recruits come to the game, they have a place to go before and after the game. And a great tribute, again, to the Villanova basketball history back in that area. And then the exact same thing for the women. That they have their own. You know, that used to be shared space, as you remember. But so we have all that along with our practice facility. And we feel like the Finneran Pavilion is the last piece of putting together exactly what we want to be the culture of Villanova basketball. We have the Wells Fargo Center experience. We have 20,000 fans in Philadelphia, in the city, then on campus. Beautiful first-class facility. Beautiful first-class practice facility. It's all connected. And that's really what's unique about Villanova basketball.
Well, I'll tell you what's not unique about Villanova basketball is you kind of had a security blanket for a couple of years. I mean, you know, when I think of you guys and all those years I came up to see Jackie and obviously spending time with you guys and watching you guys practice, you've always had continuity, but you know, you've had a core group of guys that grew with your program, understood what, like you said, the culture was all about. And the greatest thing about culture is when you have players that can obviously teach the younger players what it is to be a player at Villanova. But, you know, this year's team, new guys, and then your KG veterans have new roles. How's that been just for you? Because you've had more of a veteran team in the past few years.
Yeah, this is a unique time. You're absolutely right. Number one, unique. We miss Jackie. We miss that beautiful smile and face on campus. And even though you came with her sometimes, we miss her.
I appreciate that.
It is a different. It really is a different time, in that we've always been able to, as you mentioned, connect with our past and have experienced players, not just one or two, but we've had four or five that allowed the freshmen to grow, to play to their strengths, and but not be thrown into the fire. And we really thought we would have we knew, even though Jalen Brunson and Mikael Bridges still had another year of eligibility, they both graduated. So we knew when they graduated they would probably leave early. And we thought Dante DiVincenzo and Omari Spellman would be there one more year. But, you know, in a positive turn of fate, they just got better quicker than we thought. And so it has left us where we really only have Phil Booth and Eric Pascal, who are really the only two guys that have proven experience. Everyone else has got to prove themselves. So guys are going to get thrown into the fire. We've tried to avoid that, and not just for the good of the program, but for the good of the young guys. You know, I think part of our guys' development is that when they came in as freshmen, they didn't develop sloppy habits. They didn't develop. They developed confidence immediately, a great perspective. You know, now some of our guys are going to get thrown into it, as well as some sophomores getting thrown in. You know, Demir Cosby Roundtree and Colin Gillespie are getting thrown into it, where we thought they would have vital roles, but not really leadership roles. Now they do.
Yeah, how have those guys, like, you know, Phil Booth, you know, he's a guy that's been around, obviously the MVP of the national championship game. And then Eric, older guy, transfer, so he's got another year underneath his belt. How have those guys kind of embraced a new role? Because, you know, Phil always had a leadership skill, ability, but like Eric was the guy that was brought along in a lot of ways, and now all of a sudden he could be a focal point of what you're doing. How do those guys, and how much time do you have to spend with those guys to get them to understand, to be a total extension of you and the culture that you've built over the last, you know, since you've been there?
Well, your definition of Phil is right on. Phil Booth was a leader of last year's team. Even though, you know, he was the same class as Jalen and Mikhail. So those guys really were the leaders. Phil did it kind of in a quiet way. So Phil moving into that spot is very natural. And, I think what's going to be unique for Phil Booth is he's played, you know, with a lot of great players and always been ready to step up anytime we needed him. As you mentioned, as a freshman in the national championship game. He gets 20. He's our leading scorer with, you know, Ryan Arcidiacono, Daniel Chefu, Josh Hart, Chris Jenkins on that team. He steps up and he gets 20 in the national championship game. So he's always been there when needed. Now he's got to be dominant every day. So that's the challenge for him. And then just as you mentioned about Eric, he really has been, it's funny, when he was at Fordham, his first year under Tom Pecora, he was the leading scorer, rookie of the year in Atlantic 10. When he got here, he had to learn to be a complimentary player. Now, hopefully he didn't get too good at it, because he really was a great complimentary player the last couple of years. Great. But I do think he is very natural in this position of being a go-to guy. I think it's really who he is. And in terms of leadership for both of them, in meeting with them, we do talk a lot. But what's unique is we've got to explain to them, right, you're not in a leadership position like Jalen and Phil were, Jalen and Mikhail were last year, where they were leaders, but underneath them were Eric Pascal, you know, experienced guys. Phil mm-hmm. Booth was with them, you know. You got a lot of young guys under you. So you have to be patient with these guys, and you almost have to be more like a coach that has patience, that teaches, but still demands the best of them. And it's, none of our leaders have really had to take that on, because they've always had good juniors and sophomores behind them. These guys are going to be in a really unique leadership position.
Yeah, and then you've got a little bit of a sophomore class. I mean, like, you know, Jermaine Samuels, I mean, he was a guy that, you know, was just kind of getting his feet wet. And then Colin played really actually significant minutes for you last year at times. And Roundtree as well. Those guys, yeah. I mean, understanding, you know, now taking the next step. You know, I remember you and I talking about Colin Gillespie and saying, you know what, you know, played for Buddy Gardler, God rest his soul, just a tough kid. You know, people don't realize that. You know, I think he's another of those winning players. But how have guys like, you know, Colin and Jermaine and those guys kind of assimilated to, now they're a little bit of the KG veterans, because those other guys, you know, basically they're walking through that door with that same expectation for the first time.
Exactly. And as we talked about earlier, we didn't expect them to be in that role this year. You know, maybe next year. So they're really going to be the key, you know, to our success, especially early, middle of the season, because they have been around. Now, how quickly can they take that next step? You know, Colin Gillespie, Demir Cosby, Roundtree, and Jermaine Samuels. We also have Dylan Painter coming off a redshirt year, you know, who's been someone, you know, at the five spot that's been growing for us. So, you know, all of them are really unproven as starters or as go-to guys, which is unusual for us. But it's going to be interesting. And really, we're putting that on them. You know, we're saying to them, like, look, this is an opportunity everybody wants. You know, your sophomores, especially in this program, you had a chance to be starters here and really have an impact, you know, as a sophomore. So let's take this with great responsibility. And I think they are. It still remains to see, you know, how they're going to handle it.
How are new guys? I mean, obviously you got a fifth-year guy in Joe Cremo, and you got a very talented freshman class. Just they're talented in the level they were at before, but when you're talking about coming in and being at your level with your attention to detail, understanding how to come to a jump stop and pivot, create an angle, use a shot fake, wait on a screen, you know, be hard to screen. How, I mean, people just don't understand, like, a simple thing about getting 2 feet into the paint and being on balance and coming to a jump stop and pivoting. How long does it take guys to understand the importance of those little things?
You know, that's going to be another test for us this year, really, to see how quickly those guys can pick up some of the staples of our program. You know, you mentioned Joe Cremo, and it's one that Joe Cremo's the first fifth-year senior we've ever brought in. And the reason we did is because we felt like he was a guy that could pick those things up, because he naturally played that way, and he was open to coming in and learning the staples of Villanova basketball, and not saying, "Hey, I just want to come in and get my numbers." He really wanted to learn. So how quickly can he pick it up? That's going to be important to us. And he seems to be doing a good job so far. And then the freshmen, like you said, how can we get them there by midway through the season, so we're functioning as a really efficient unit and not just playing, with like a bunch of talented young guys. So that's what the season's going to be all about, Seth. It's unique for us, but it's kind of exciting.
Patience. People see Jay Wright and butt down, but I mean, you love your players like no one ever loves their players, like, and you care about them at a level that's unbelievable, and the relationship you have with them, for the people that are listening, is amazing. But you're not afraid to coach your guys hard. How hard is it to be, but you're going to have to be a little bit more patient. How hard is that for you?
Yeah. Well, you're asking the question. We always, we're in Manhattan, as you know, and we have our guys here. We're on fall break. We bring them in. They went to see Hamilton last night, and we brought in Brian Higgins, one of our alums who runs a big hedge fund here, to talk to him about business. So we're always talking to him about learning and growing and really we share a saying with them: don't tell people your problems, because 80% of the people don't care, and the other people are 20%, and they're happy you have those problems. So don't tell anybody. And you're asking me about my problems, and that's my biggest fear, is how patient can I be? I'm scared to death about it, to be honest with you. Like, like you said, you want them to be good. You know their potential. But I have to understand that, they're all put in difficult positions. Even Phil and Eric, as seniors, are in a more difficult leadership position than Jalen and Mikhail were, because they don't have the guys below them that are experienced, and the young guys, they're trying. We have good guys. We had a great intellectual conversation with these guys and our alumnus Brian Higgins about business. You can see their character, but how is that? It's really going to come down to us as coaches, me especially, being patient with them. And I think if we can be patient, by the end of the year, we can be a really good team. But I'll tell you honestly, I'm scared to death of my ability to be patient. I know that's going to be my greatest challenge.
Yeah, people just don't understand. They think they're playing hard. They think they're sprinting through a screen, and they don't get it. I got to ask you one last question, because I know. And by the way, that group of Villanova players that's in New York, when they have that big time dinner that you guys always have there tonight, they will be the best dressed group of players in America. There's no doubt about it.
I hope so, man. I hope so.
Oh, man. But hey, look, you're in New York, and obviously the trial's going on in New York. And when I just say FBI investigation, and what's the, you're a lifer. I mean, you really, really deeply care about our game. What's the first thing that comes through your mind?
Just fear. It's a really tough time for our game and for our business. You're in my careers, we've seen a lot of things happen in the game that weren't positive, but we've never had the FBI involved. This is a whole nother level. Even when there are NCAA issues, it's embarrassing for all of us, when there's NCAA issues. But this is another level when it's FBI. This creates some fear in all of us, in for our game, for our profession. And it's really sad. And I think we all have to take responsibility, all of us in the coaching business, all of us in the NCAA. And I also think that's first. We have to take responsibility, and we've got to make it better. But number two, I just think it screams to the fact that this model in our country of college athletics has to change, and we need the NBA to help us. We need the NBA Players Association to allow guys to come out of high school. If they don't want to go to college, they deserve the right to do that if they want to do that. And I think we need the NBA to invest in the G League, give them the chance to do it, go to the G League, make enough money to make a good living or get the money that they deserve based on their talents, or go right to the NBA, allow them to do that. And we need the NBA Players Association to change the rule. And then if they go to college, say that they're not going to take them for 3 years, so that the guys that are playing college basketball are guys that want to be in college. They want an education. A lot of this will be eliminated if we do that. So I think we need the NBA to help us. And then also we got to say, we still, as coaches, have to maintain the integrity to keep college basketball at a level that keeps it authentic. Student athletes playing basketball.
My biggest concern is that you raise the G League money up. They stop going to school. They try to go to the G League 3 years later. They're not NBA players. And then where do they go back to? That's the one. And I know it happens in baseball, but that's just my one concern. Are we selling a dream that all of a sudden 3 years later, these kids are going to be 21 years old. They're not going to have a college, a support system, an umbrella, a landing spot to go back to. And that's one of those things that's just, you know, I worry about knowing the kids that I coached.
Yeah, I think you're right. But I think this idea that these kids are listening to us and taking the advice of intelligent people around them or educated people around them to take that chance on their education, I think those times are gone. I think we got to be honest about that. The old model doesn't work anymore. So we have to give them the choice. I think some of them will take the choice and be successful. Some of them will not, but then eventually they will all learn, here's the value of my education and going to college, and here's my value of going to the G League. And I think more of them will choose to go to college and appreciate the education when they see a few fail in the G League. And I hate to be crass about that, but the other option is where we are now, and this is getting worse. And I think even more people are going to get hurt this way than if we made it legitimate. And my final piece about that, Seth, is college basketball is not authentic anymore. If all this is going on, these guys aren't in college to get educations. You know what I mean? They're in college because they're being forced to go there. They don't want to go there. And so it's not authentic. And anything that's not authentic is eventually going to crumble.
It's a good point. J-Boy, I appreciate your time. Have a great season. I think you're going to have fun. You know, like I always say, you know, sometimes even though you take it maybe a step backwards in terms of all these young guys, it's got to be invigorating, and I know you'll enjoy it, and no one will do a better job with their team than you will. And I look forward to seeing the Finn. I mean, Jackie G and I are going to have to make a game at the Finn this year.
We'd love to have you. Just because we don't have Jackie on campus anymore, still give me a call in the middle of the season. Say, remember I told you, keep your sanity when all these young guys go crazy.
You got it, brother. Welcoming in Michigan State head coach Tom Izzo. Tom, a little different team this year. Obviously, Miles Bridges, Jaren Jackson, no longer with you. How different is this team, though, than any other team? And how different are your expectations than any other year?
Well, my expectations aren't a lot different. It's a different team. More like the Denzel Valentine team when we lost Gary Harris and Adrian Payne, you know, where we lost two guys that were, you know, very good picks. And but then we brought experience back, you know, and right now with Winston, with Langford, and with Ward, and maybe a healthy McQuaid and Goines, who have been unhealthy for a couple of years, we finally got some juniors and seniors, and maybe the surprise guy is still going to be, we had two guys, and Xavier Tillman has really had a hell of a summer and fall, and Kyle Arnes is back, and he was out for almost 2 years with the leg injury, and he's one of my tougher guys, and he can really shoot it, so it's got the highest vertical on the team. So, you know, I think we're more athletic. I think we shoot it better. But I'd say we're a little less talented because you don't lose those two and not be, but a lot more experienced.
You know, you mentioned Nick Ward, and, you know, obviously, you know, I remember coming in when he was a freshman, and he was a guy that, you know, look, he's got great hands, he's got good footwork. You know, the light bulb hadn't gone on, but he was productive.
Right.
Now, all of a sudden, I look at these pictures, and I'm looking forward to seeing him another couple of weeks, but I look at these pictures, and he looks like a player to match his skills. I mean, right? I mean his whole body has changed.
35 pounds since that freshman year, and you know, another 15 this past summer, but changed his body. I mean, he's really worked hard. I, you know, hey, he's been a guy that him and I butted heads. I mean, there's no secrets about it last year. And I promise when you talk to him, I think, you know, sometimes coaches got to give in, sometimes players got to give in. I mean, he had to give in. You know, he had to do some things. He had to learn how to cover people. Part of it was his conditioning. Part of it, he was always in foul trouble because of his conditioning. And part of it was, you know, just figuring out how to play some defense and guard a ball screen. He's very good guarding the post, but that's not as effective anymore as it used to be, you know, and now more people, including us, will probably start switching more. So, you know, he weighed in at 239 yesterday in practice. You know, he came here at 278 or something, and that's made a big difference. He's worked on his shooting, you know. He's got to become a better free throw shooter, and that was one of the battle cries of the summer because that's another reason you don't play him the last 5 minutes of the game. People were Shaq attacking him, you know. And so I've been really pleased with him, you know, which is hard for me to do, as you know, Seth. But
you're happily
really
miserable.
Have
I understand
done the
that.
Things that I've asked him to do, and now it's can he do those things on a consistent basis when the season, you know, the spring, summer, and fall has been great. Now we'll see how he does when the lights go on.
Now, another guy that you've at times been happily miserable with is Cassius Winston, who I thought he was terrific last year. And he's grown a great deal, but you know, his role again has changed. I mean, because he had Tom, who was kind of the leader of the team in a lot of ways, even though it wasn't, you know, in minutes, but he was the leader. Right. And Miles was a guy that just every single day, you know, brought a smile and energy.
Right.
How has Cassius handled this new role?
Well, you know, that's a great, great point. And you kind of see the intangibles. It's the coach in you now, not the
pontificator.
You know, not the podcast guy, or the announcer, or the analyst. It's the coach in you because, I mean, Cassius had to change his body. We knew that. His body fat went down a lot in the last year and a half. You know, we don't realize he kind of led the league in assists. He led the league in three-point shooting. Seth, he shot 56% in our league from the three last year.
That's crazy.
So that was a major plus, you know. And so there were a lot of great things, but again, defensively, you know, so we had two guys that were involved in a lot of pick and rolls, your point guard and your center, that struggled to guard. So that was been a battle cry for him. Change the body a little bit more, change the personality a little bit more, which he's really trying to do, and change the defense a lot more, still keeping that shooting. And his basketball IQ, you know, there's been some really good ones here, and a couple in Meyer and Valentine and of course, Draymond, and of course, you know, the Magic Man. I mean, it was probably the epitome of basketball IQ. But this kid has, and I said this when he was a sophomore in high school, phenomenal. The other day in practice, you know, we stat all the scrimmage, you know, it's 13 assists, one turnover, you know. That's what he's capable of, along with his shooting, which I didn't know was as good as I've seen. So, you know, I'm expecting big things out of Cassius, and I think he's ready to do that as a junior now.
Yeah, he reminds me, and before I get to that, he reminds me a little bit, if he could just be a little bit tougher defensively, he's got right. A little Skiles feel to him in terms of his feel and getting guys involved and seeing things. Now, the other guy that's coming back is a guy that, you know, he plays hard every single night, but it seems like he almost suffocates himself because it's so important to him, and that's Josh Langford. How do you get a guy like that just to relax and enjoy it? Because, you know, just, you know, I got to know him a little bit. It just seems like he almost puts pressure on himself because he wants to please you and he wants to, you know, do something special.
You know, that's, again, a good way to put it. You did spend some time with Josh. Unbelievable kid, you know, great student, great kid, probably in the gym more than anybody I got, and probably has put more pressure on himself. And And that's what we've talked to him about, you know. He, too, lost 10 pounds. He, you know, the pro guys now, when they come back, whether it be Denzel or Draymond or, you know, Gary Harris, I mean, every one of them, you know, the sleeker, stronger guy has gotten to be better. So everybody's eating a little better. Everybody's doing. And, you know, he felt like 10 pounds or 8 pounds made a huge difference. He's jumping better. But I think he is a little more comfortable in his own skin, to use the phrase. And and I think, you know, the pressure, at one time I thought it was me. At one time I thought it was his dad. And you know what? His dad and I talked, and it really was Josh. And I think he is more comfortable in his own skin. He knows he has a big role. He's not Gary Harris, but he is a poor man's Gary right now, because he's a shooting guard that can play both ends of the court. I think he works so hard on his mid-range game. He's a great mid-range shooter that I thought it hurt his three. So this summer it was back to making sure you can shoot a three. And then because you can shoot a three, it takes advantage of the mid-range game, because now pump fake and one dribble and you can shoot it. And so those three guys all had great summers. And I don't know if anybody coaches them. They should be all much improved.
How about the young guys? So you, I mean, obviously, you know, Kenny Tillman, you said Xavier Tillman is just – I was impressed with him as a freshman, just as he was like one of your all-time big guys that you had. That
he was
just,
you know,
relentless and hard.
He's tough. He's strong. He rebounds the daylights out of the ball. But what he really worked on this summer is his shooting, and he is shooting the ball a lot better. And that just gives another dimension. It might give us the ability to play real big and go with him, and because he can guard smaller guys, especially at 240. And him and Nick could play together more. Kenny gives us a chance that we can go small or big there. But Kenny healthy and McQuaid healthy, we really need McQuaid to shoot the ball like he can, too. And in fairness to the kid, he just had some bizarre injuries, double sports hernia, you know, foot. I mean, he's been healthy. Hopefully he'll stay healthy. And if he does, you know, I think we got 7 good veterans there. You know, we've got the 3 juniors. Then we've got Arns, who's coming off his injuries from 2 years ago, and even from high school. And then, of course, with Kenny and McQuaid and Xavier, that's a pretty good core of now junior, senior guys, you know, which we haven't had the last couple of years. We've got 5 freshmen that came in, and I'm really – sometimes you recruit a kid and he's not as good. Our 2 wings have been really good, Gabe Brown and Aaron Henry. Henry's got, you know, tied for the highest vertical on the team, a very good athlete at 6'5.5", 6'6", long arms. We have some length at the wings. Gabe can really shoot it at 6'7.5", kind of a Morris Peterson-type guy, only more energy at the same age. And maybe the best of the bunch is potentially there's a kid named Marcus Bingham, who's 6'10.5". He's got a 7'5" wingspan, and he can really shoot the ball from 3. But he came in weighing 195 pounds, you know, and we got him up to 210, so we're trying to put him on the Seth Greenberg diet. I don't know if you know that.
Well,
one.
You were telling me about all these, you know, guys getting learning to eat healthier. I'm sure that's rolled over to your eating habits.
I am. I'm healthier.
Less ranch,
I'm
less
better
ranch.
Shape. I'm healthier. Been working out, so
ranch dressing with your chicken fingers.
I don't eat as much dressing with those, and I eat naked chicken fingers now, no fried anymore. So I'm really improving, Seth. You'd be happy with me, but the other guy that's going to play is, you know, because he's our backup point guard, is Foster Lawyer, and this kid is unique. He has got some skills in him. He's only 5'9", but he can 5'10", but he can. You know, he can really shoot the ball. I mean, he averaged 30-some points a game in high school. He won 2 state championships back-to-back in Class A, so that's pretty good. But he's got a high basketball IQ. My big problem is those 2 point guards have to guard better. You know, the first front point of attack is your point guard. And so we've been working hard on that.
I spent some time visiting my mom in New York the other day, and I was thinking about this whole FBI investigation and everything that's going on and how it makes our game look.
Yeah.
When I say FBI investigation to college basketball, What goes through your mind? I mean, you're a lifer. I mean, you've seen this thing from all sides.
You know, the FBI in basketball, I guess you just kind of go back to the major gambling scandals, you know, that I only read about and heard about, you know. And it's not very often as FBI and basketball put together. And, you know, it saddens me. I mean, like everything else, Seth, you've been in it a long time. I've had some buddies that have been in a long time, and some of the figures that are being thrown around, and I mean, I almost feel naive. At the same time, I don't think the brush should be painted widely, and I can't even comment on what's being painted because I wasn't in the room. I wasn't on the wiretap, and I don't want to get into commenting on something I really don't know everything about, but. There's always been some problems in sports. I mean, there's always going to be. I just hope it's a smaller group than a larger group. And I don't know what will come out of this. I really have no idea. I just hope we don't go ever again where we're saying FBI and basketball, because that's a bad, bad combination.
Yeah, because no matter what, for the average fan, they hear it, and it basically it taints everyone.
That's the problem, and it shouldn't. I mean, I don't know who and what, you know, this and that, but I'm telling you, there's a large majority of programs that are doing it right. The same as I've learned a lot this year, you know, sometimes one or two bad apples can ruin a barrel. You know, the barrel is college basketball, and maybe it's our job to make sure that doesn't happen.
And lastly, just, you know, last year, you had a great group of kids. I mean, you really did. Yeah. I mean, you know, Jaron always a smile on his face, and you know, obviously kind of blew up. And I know how much you love Miles Bridges.
Yeah.
I mean, I just, man, I know how special he was to you. And then, you know, you guys had to deal with all that other stuff that was going on in your campus. Yeah. How much, you know, obviously, and I know how much it hurt you. I mean, as a friend of yours, I mean, it hurt me seeing you hurt. I mean, it was something that was not fun for me, and I can't even imagine Loop and the kids going through that with you. But how much more fun is it now just to go and, you know, obviously that whole investigation came out. You guys were cleared. Just moving forward, how much I know you care
well,
about
like
survivors
I said, Seth,
and everything.
And I will say this to you on the podcast that, you know, I don't feel cleared because I didn't feel we did anything wrong in the first place. I don't want to under. It was hard on me. It was hard on my family. It was hard on my program. It was hard on the survivors what they went through. But me and Nassar, I mean D'Antonio Nassar and Izzo, were never linked, and should have never been linked. I mean, he was as despicable to me as to anybody else, you know. And I mean, that part, you know, was difficult. I mean, I don't think anything. I learned a lot, and that's what you should do when you go through tough times. You should learn a lot and try to make sure that you honor the people that went through even more than you did by making sure it'll never happen again. And that's one of my missions here. You know, we had a bad apple. I mean, there's no secret. He's put away for 2,000 years or whatever it is, and deservingly so. And those people suffered more than I suffered. But, you know, I felt for our team because they got thrown into something that they had nothing to do with, you know. And how much it affected, I don't know. You know, Syracuse played good. We were the third best three-point shooting team in America, and we couldn't make a shot, you know. And that's sports. But it was a difficult stretch down stretch row. Talked to you a few times, you know. Maybe I should have handled it better. Maybe I should have said more. Maybe I should have closed my locker room, you know. But I didn't. I did what I do, and I don't regret it. I just regret that it ever happened, and I regret that some of us were portrayed in a way that I didn't think we deserved to be. But I think more than anything, I get paid to get that. Our players didn't, and I feel for the survivors, and I feel for the players. So I feel for those kind of people more than I do myself or anyone else.
Well said. Iz, we'll see you in a couple of weeks. I'm excited to see you guys, and have a great year.
Okay, buddy.
Thank you to our coaches, Jay Wright and Tom Izzo, for their time as they prepare for the start of the season. Thank you for listening, and D Squared.
Yes, sir.
America, for now on, you know, starting next week, America gets us every single week.
How lucky is America?
It doesn't get much better than that. Life is good for America. And you know what? If you like us, subscribe to our podcast, Courtside, on the ESPN app or Apple Podcast or wherever you listen to your podcast. And make sure to give us a review because you know what? This is the world's greatest podcast. You know what? The season's starting. The games are starting. Yeah, we're going to have the FBI investigation and the next investigation. And we're going to be talking about guys going early to the NBA, but once the game starts, you know, everything else pales because it's all about the games.
Thank you for listening to Courtside with Greenberg and Dockage. You can listen and subscribe to all ESPN podcasts in the Listen tab of the ESPN app, including the latest from the NBA and the Hoop Collective podcast, available in the ESPN app or Apple Podcasts.